Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Welcome to Murder
and Mimosas,
a true crime podcast brought to you by a mother and daughter duo,
bringing you murder stories with a mimosas in hand.
Just a quick disclaimer before we get started. Our show is Murder and Mimosas, a true crime podcast. This means that we do discuss crimes, including but not limited to disappearances, murder, and sexual assault. All our episodes are told with the respect of the victims and the victims' families in mind. We strive to ensure that we provide factual information, but some information is more verifiable than others. With that, grab your mimosas and let's dive in.
Welcome back. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Danica.
Today we're going to tell you about the story of Andy Thomas. So grab your mimosas. You sip while we share. This was a case sent in by a listener. So thanks, Jen. I've never heard of this and I still wouldn't have it not been for you. So it was a sweltering hot day, pretty much like all the days in Arkansas that are summer. It was Wednesday, August 3rd, 1981. The temperatures were in the 90s that day, and if you live anywhere close to Arkansas, you've probably heard someone say it wouldn't be so bad if it weren't for the humidity. The summer days bring people out to camp and enjoy the relief of cooling off in the water. This summer was no different. The Three Sisters Parks in Hot Springs was a great place to camp, and many were that day. Patrolling the camp was Park Ranger Andy Thomas. He was just 30 years old at the time and had become a park ranger in August of 1979. He did all the training, which also included going through the law enforcement training academy, and he even attended training and was qualified as a sharpshooter. Yeah, all that probably seemed useless to a park ranger since there had never been a shooting take place at a park before. That was all going to change that hot Wednesday evening, though. Our families go camping every year, and I don't recall ever having an issue with a park ranger. Do you, Danica?
No, I mean, I know I've seen them, and they've come around and told us, you know, to turn certain things off at certain times and just make sure that you keep the noise to a minimum and, you know, just general things. But like any law enforcement, like if you follow the rules, then they pretty much leave you alone.
Andy's job was to work in the visitor center and register campers and answer the phones until they closed at 8 that night. I don't know about then, but I do know now they give you a tag when you stay to put on your car so they can tell that you've registered.
Right. Usually it's like neon pink or orange or yellow or something that you can see really easily.
Right. So after the visitor center closes, he drives around the park just patrolling things. That night on his rounds, he notices a car parked out near the marina. There are two young men and a young woman. They aren't in the car, but sitting on the picnic table nearby. Andy gets out, and, you know, he's just checking the situation. He asks them, do they plan on camping that night?
Okay. Yeah.
They tell him if it costs money, they're not staying. He informs them that there is one that doesn't cost anything, and it's just down the road. It's called Iron Springs, not too far, and they can stay for free.
Why haven't we ever stayed at a free one?
I was surprised, too. I didn't know it was even a thing and had to look it up to see if it really exists or exists anymore. There are some in Arkansas, six to be exact, but they, of course, do not have water, toilet, shower, or electricity.
So you're like roughing it. I mean, I guess that makes sense. You get what you pay for.
So Iron Springs, though, is no longer a free camping area. They have a few picnic tables and restrooms and a place to take a swim. But for the most part, it's just a rest stop. Andy hasn't been at this job long, but he has intuition. He feels like there's something off or nervous with these kids because none of them would make eye contact with him. Also, they were in a brand new 1981 Buick Regal. If they can't afford the $4 to camp, he headed back to his car, but on his way, he writes down their license plate. When he gets back to his truck, he calls the plates in to the Hot Springs State Police. Once they get back to him, which took about 10 to 15 minutes, he finds out it's a hit, a 1053, which means the car is stolen.
No wonder they were acting so suspicious.
He's going back to see if they've left yet, and if they haven't, well, they would wish they had. He sees one of the males heading into the restroom. He plans on arresting them all, but with two instead of three at the moment, it should go smoother. Before he gets out, he does call for backup. There's one man sitting on the driver's side and the girl on the passenger side. He approaches the vehicle and says, "Folks, get out of your car and don't make any moves. Just be real easy and step up here to the picnic table and put your hands on it. I want to talk to you about something. Don't be alarmed. Just step here and be easy." They both get out of the car and they begin walking to the picnic table. The man pulls a gun, aims it at Andy, and begins yelling something that Andy can't quite make out what he's saying. Instinct kicks in for Andy, and he grabs his service revolver.
A thrilling murder mystery subscription box game, Killer Mystery, transforms game night into an immersive, captivating, and mysterious adventure. Puzzles, ciphers, online clues, and more make this game can't miss for mystery fans.
Read the story cards, birth the clues, and remember, everyone's a suspect.
Season 1, The 80s Were Killer, is out now. Get yours today at www.killermystery.com.
In the city of Cielo con Angelitos, dreams are made or broken in an instant. For one family, the dream turned into a nightmare overnight. The question everyone wants answered is, who killed Kate and Lewis Hansen?
Hosted on his side and starts shooting. The girl takes off running toward the dock, and the other man exits the restroom about this time. Andy is yelling for him to get on the ground, and put his hands behind his head. He's trying to keep the girl in his sights because she could have a gun or something on her too, and the other man is bleeding out on the ground with his gun beside him. He runs over to secure the gun from the man lying on the ground while still aiming his gun at the suspect that just came out of the bathroom. When he picks the gun up, he's stunned at its lightweight. He realizes then this was only a toy gun.
Oh, no. You can't blame him, though. He thought his life was in danger.
The police get there and handcuff the other suspect, and they all are looking for the woman that got away. The man lying on the ground, however, is dead. The coroner's report would later state there was a gunshot wound to the left side of his face and what appears to be an exit wound in his neck. There's also a gunshot wound to the left side of his chest. Okay, here's some trivia. Do you know when they finally prohibited realistic-looking toy guns?
1992, I'm pretty sure. At that point, they required the orange cap that you see now at the end of a gun, or it must be like real bright color like you see with a lot of like water guns. And I will say that it doesn't stop anyone from altering a toy gun if they want to make it look like a real gun, like in this case. The law is only as good as the people who follow it.
True. So the two men went to Kmart while they were in Hot Springs, and they bought the toy gun and plans to rob others. This gun was a chrome gun with black and ivory colored handle. Hopefully we can find a picture to add. The ones I remember looking at, most were in black and white, and it was also his body laying there, which I don't want to post that. But I think there may have been a colored one of those, and if so, we'll post it for you. So deputies Daniel Abernathy and Larry Siegel arrive, and Andy tells them about the female suspect that took off, and she should be around the dock area. Abernathy got the PA system and advised the suspect to come out with her hands up. That sounds like on a movie. They waited a few minutes, and she didn't come out. The deputies spent 20 minutes canvassing the area, and they couldn't locate her. They returned back and told Chief Polk that they couldn't find her, but they believed she may be in the water. They advised him as soon as they had more manpower, they would search for her. In the meantime, though, they take Andy's gun and ask how many shots he fired. He isn't sure. He says 2, 3, maybe even 4. It turns out it was four rounds, 2 hitting a tree and 2 hitting the suspect. The deputies begin the search again for the woman when they are approached by some campers that tell them that they saw her in the tent by them. They locate the girl and transport both suspects to the sheriff's office. While en route, the male suspect informs the police that his ID is fake and he's not really 21, but 20 years old. He says they got fake IDs made at the carnival in Washington.
I feel like the fake ID is probably the least of his worries, but I was just at the carnival and didn't see anywhere I could get a fake ID, so I learned something new all the time.
I don't know if you can now. Apparently, you could then.
I mean, was this part of the event, the circus? Like, now we would like to give you all the fake IDs. I just don't know how this works.
Well, hopefully it makes more sense later. They have 2 suspects as well as this dead man on the ground that has 2 IDs in his wallet. One from California that says his name is John Savendal and he's 21 years old. The other ID is from Washington and says his name is Richard Stone. The plates on the car are from Wyoming. The registration in the car says it belongs to someone in Colorado. So they need to contact the next of kin, but they have no idea who this man really even is. They do contact Durango, Colorado police, since that is where the car was stolen from. And they give the corporal their number they retrieved from the suspect's wallet. And all it says on it is Rebecca. So they call the number and speak to Rebecca's husband and find out the deceased man's real name is Richard Gring. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. And Rebecca is his sister. He's from Washington, and he was 22 when he died. But get this, he had escaped from the Walla Walla prison in Washington in June.
He escaped? What was he in prison for?
For burglary. So they go to question the other male suspect, who turns out to be 17-year-old Perry Martinez from Colorado. Not 20, not 21, but 17. They ask him about who he was with. He says Richard Stone and a girl named Diane Martinez. The police let him know that Richard's last name is actually Goring. He tells them this is news to him. They ask how long he's known Richard, and he says a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. He met Richard in Colorado, and the two of them headed to Wyoming, where they met Diane. And get this, they met her because all three of them were working at a circus in Wyoming.
A bunch of clowns, these three. But, I mean, at least the ID thing makes a little more sense now.
So he asked Perry, did he know that Richard was an escaped convict from Walla Walla prison? He first thaws and says no. But after some, you know, those bad cop eyes, he tells them yes. He had told him about a week ago. Also, I forgot to mention, there was also a knife lying by Richard and Perry had a knife in his possession, too. This knife was traced back to an armed robbery in Rio Grande, Texas. The knife has the victim's name on it, literally. They go talk to the female suspect. Her last name wasn't Martinez, though. It was Shorty, and she is also just 17. She says she's known Richard about 3 months, but had just been with Richard and Perry about a week. She really doesn't give the police any information. She's either actually clueless or smart enough to keep her mouth shut.
Let's not give her too much credit. She's 17, working at a circus, running around with an escaped convict that she just met. Do we know anything more about her? What was her home life like? Was she running from something or someone?
Sadly, I couldn't find anything about Diane or Perry. How their lives turned out. Did they stay out of trouble? Are they even still alive? All I do know is they were extradited back to Colorado due to stealing the car. I don't know what became of that. I couldn't even find anything out about Richard's life. What I do know in this case, Andy was unfounded and he was not charged with anything.
I mean, he shouldn't be, but I'm sure that haunted him for years, finding out that he shot a man who just had a toy gun.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if I'd let that bother me. The fear he must have felt when he saw the guy have his gun aimed at him. I feel like I would just feel justified, but that's just me. And I don't know how I would handle it since I've not been in that. But Andy went on to work for the Parks and Rec for 37 years and died at age 67. I won't read all his accomplishments, but he had a lot and really did a lot with his life.
I just hope this was a life lesson for the two other teens, that this isn't how you want to live your life. It could be cut very short like Richard's, or you could be sitting in prison like he was.
Yeah, that's what makes me wonder if Richard had literally rather die than go back to prison, or is it just that he was so dumb and didn't want to follow rules that just nothing mattered to him? But thanks for listening, and remember, send us any stories you may have that you want covered, and we'll see what we can do with those.
We always recommend more bubbly
and less OJ.
Cheers! If you'd like to see pictures from today's episode, you can find us at murder.mimosas on Instagram. You can also find us at murder.mimosas on TikTok, Twitter. And if you have a case you would like us to do, you can send that to murder.mimosas@gmail.com. And lastly, we are on Facebook at Murder and Mimosas Podcast, where you can interact with us there. We love any type of feedback you can give us, so please rate and review us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.